Hi everyone, my name is Patrick Akil, and for today's episode, we cover tech recruitment. The value a recruiter can add towards the recruitment process can be a real time saver in finding that perfect match for all parties involved. And that wasn't actually always clear to me. Joining me today is Chase Kocher, who's the founder and CEO of Aim for Hire. I'll put all his links to his socials in the description below. Check him out. And with that being said, enjoy the episode. How long have you been in the recruiting business?
Straight from college. So it's been, let's see, it's 8 years.
Yeah.
Almost 9 years.
8, 9 years.
The irony is I when I came out of college, I went straight into the sales side of recruiting. So I was selling companies and meeting with companies in town on why they should use our recruiting team.
Okay.
I wasn't doing the actual recruiting itself.
Yeah.
And as I moved along my career, it was kind of just slowly but surely I started, you know, when you're meeting with companies all the time and talking to them about how you can find them the right talent, et cetera, it's like, you know, it makes a lot of sense for you to also be highly involved in the recruiting side. And if you don't know how to recruit, then it's hard for you to really sell that as a service.
So right. Yeah.
So I just started getting into recruiting, kind of teaching myself in a lot of ways, and then just working with, you know, the recruiters, whoever worked with me at that point, and kind of created my own. I think that's one of the reasons I'm a decent recruiter, is I kind of created my own way of learning how to do it, you know, I never went through like a formal training on how to do it by some corporate company. I kind of applied my sales knowledge experience and then kind of created my own little training program out of it.
Nice. Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot, actually. It makes sense that if you, first of all, say, well, our recruiting team is the best thing and you're kind of selling that, that you would also need to be in the thick of it before you can actually point out the value that you can add there.
As a sales guy, like I felt like such a, like, you know, you got to believe in what you're selling, right? Yeah, as a sales guy, I felt like a sellout. If I'm like, you know, I had, and I think that's what kind of kept driving me to starting my own company and being in control of, you know, hiring and everything, is, you know, you have to believe in what you're selling. And if the recruiting team was already, you know, if someone else did that hiring, if someone else built that team, you know, it's a little bit out of your control in some cases. So I think, you know, it was hugely important for me that I believed in what I was selling or I was going to lose the passion to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I 100% agree there. But 8 to 9 years ago, was recruiting very different in how it is now? Or even did you start out on more of the tech side, or how did things grow for you from there?
It's always been on the tech side. So I've always worked with tech companies, but as I moved through my career, like the companies we'd partner with would kind of get smaller and smaller. So when I started, it was recruiting and working with, you know, Fortune 500 type companies, Charles Schwab, Dell, a lot of the big players here in Austin.
Okay.
And honestly, I hated it.
Mm.
I just hated it. I enjoyed finding people jobs and like connecting them with opportunities, but the companies, you know, it's so transactional for a big company when they're hiring that they're just kind of trying to, you know, put butts in seats.
Yeah.
And, you know, there isn't as much of a, I guess, a skill in recruiting that type of person. It's more of like, you know, how many resumes can I get together, send them all to the company and let them pick whoever they want. And as I, you know, as I progressed through my career, I kept working with like smaller companies, ones that, you know, when they made hires, it's such an impactful hire if you're a company of 20, 30, even a couple, even 1,000, even, you know, several hundred employees.
Yeah.
It's just more important. It's more of value. And I think that's what kind of attracted me through my career was there. As far as how it's changed, you know, the work from home thing has certainly been a huge change that COVID kind of triggered. You know, talent, and especially technical and product talent, were always interested in working from home. Like, I think, you know, you as a software, you might be able to speak to this a bit too, but I feel like engineers always were like, I could do this from home, you know, just let, you know, leave me be. I want to do my thing in my own spot instead of coming to the office every day.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden COVID happens and there's no choice. And now you have companies that are trying to figure out how the heck to get people back to the office, or should they even keep their office? it's that that's probably been one of the biggest changes. And then the demand for technical talent. Mm. It's since I started in recruiting, it's been through the roof. Yeah. Companies have always needed software engineers, product managers, product designers. But especially over the last 8 years, and then with COVID kind of causing some of these industries that, you know, maybe never used a lot of software. Mm. You know, I always think of hospitals and healthcare, like they're using systems that were built 30, 40, maybe 100 years ago.
Exactly.
You know, and now with COVID, like everyone's forced to adopt software. Like even restaurants have to use food delivery apps and ways to kind of like increase their ability to sell so they can stay in business. So everyone was forced to use technology. So I think that's probably the demand for talent in my mind for tech talent, like just keeps going. It's just like on this skyrocket. And with that, you know, engineers, product people, really a lot of those skill sets in tech, you know, their value goes up. And I think candidates and talent are a little more aware from like the glass doors and stuff like that of what their value is to a company, like in a compensation package.
Yeah.
So I would say that's also probably when I started a senior software engineer in Austin was probably like, you know, 120, 140K. Okay. Now, you know, as I don't know how it is where you are, but you know, here in the States, like senior engineer, whether they're in California or in other places, I mean, you're talking high hundreds into the 200s and above type, you know, salary range. So it can be tough to compete for small companies.
I can imagine.
If they want to hire five engineers at 200K, that's a million for the year that they're going to spend on just five employees.
And yeah.
So I think that part's been super interesting to see is just, you know, the engineers that are willing to maybe take less money, more stock options and take the risk of a startup, or do they just want to go to Google and make 300-400K a year?
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, when you say Fortune 500 companies, to me, it sounds like volume, right? They have X amount of positions and the benefit that everyone actually wants to work there because they also pay incredibly high amounts of salary, which is good. However, when you're on the recruiting side and you're trying to fit kind of the request and demand in that way, yeah, it can feel very transactional, very volume heavy in that way. So I like that you trended towards smaller companies, right? Because your contribution there is way more impactful than it is at a Fortune 500 company, right? Finding the right candidate when you only have 10 people, when you only have 20 people, it's like 10% of all the people you have all of a sudden. Yeah, that's a huge impact in a company that you can make in that way then.
Exactly, man. And I think the other thing is, you know, I always think of it from my sales side of like finding new businesses is the smaller the company, you know, we as a recruiting company, we probably get to work with the CTO or the VP of engineering, like people that are really making the decisions for the organization. Whereas, you know, at a Fortune 500 company, recruiters usually just talk to the hiring managers. So nothing wrong with just being a manager. But when you get to talk to a CTO or a VP of engineering, you can make impactful changes to their process that actually produces results pretty quickly.
Yeah.
As opposed to starting with the manager and then you talk to the director and then the VP. And then there's all these tiers of hierarchy, of course, at a corporate company. And it's hard to kind of, you know, if there's a change that you could make from the recruiting side that would get you better people, you know, in order to see that change actually occur, it's going to take, you know, several months, if not years, to get to the right person and talk to them. And then they have to instill the values in the rest of the organization.
Yeah.
So I just fell in love with the smaller companies because I've always been like a fight for the little guy type of person.
I like that.
I was a little guy. Like I hit a growth spurt in college. So I'm 6 feet now, but I was like five, you know, always the tiniest guy on the basketball court growing up. So I'm like, I kind of have it built in me of just like, yeah, like let's go work with the small companies. Like they can compete with the big guys. I believe it.
I like that a lot. Yeah. But I wonder, so big companies pay a higher salaries, right? I think in some points that's a given, right? It's hard to compete that because they are established and they can afford that. And for smaller companies, there's a lot more risk involved there. But then when you are a smaller company, what can you offer that bigger companies can't, right? Or what have you seen that smaller companies can offer? I like personally the work from anywhere package where it doesn't really matter where you are or in which country you are. That to me feels very appealing.
Absolutely. There are a couple ways a smaller company can compete, and you know, they're not going to win, as you mentioned, on money, on salary.
Yeah.
So where can you win, right? As a small company, it's flexibility. It, like you just said, working from wherever you might be. You know, if you're a small company here in Austin, you could go find engineers overseas. You can find engineers domestically that are maybe in like a lower cost of living area, or you could even hire them here in Austin, but just not have them come in an office every day. I think that flexibility, kind of the hybrid, getting them into the office, that's the tough part about small companies is, like, you know, they want to offer work from home all the time, but also part of what makes them unique is that they're all, you know, they're collectively all on the same page all the time and they can make quick adjustments. Whereas a big company, you know, adjusts so slowly because of how big they are. Part of being a small agile company is you can change direction, you know, on a corner. So I think that's where some of these smaller companies are trying to figure out, you know, half in office, half from work from home. But that's something I suggest is like flexibility. It doesn't need to be something exact, but being flexible, being agile in the recruiting process, meaning you got to move quickly through your interviews so you can, because you don't want to take a month to interview somebody and then they have an offer from Google, an offer from Amazon, and then an offer from you. Then you're kind of screwed.
Yeah, you're late.
Unless that person just genuinely cares, like, you know, about your company, which you can't rule that out. But, you know, when 300, 400K gets thrown at them, it's hard for any human to turn that down.
Oh, yeah.
I think the third thing is, and this is a pride thing, is some companies, they're like, if I'm interviewing you, I shouldn't be having to kind of sell you on why you should join us.
Okay.
You know, like there's kind of this ego of, I'm at the company, I was a part of it growing up, and like, why should I let you into our kind of group, into our company, as opposed to, we need people and you're a freaking amazing engineer. Like, how can I get you to join us instead of Google, Facebook, Amazon, whatever?
Yeah.
I think that's probably the toughest one, man, is depending on how the hiring market is, because sometimes it's an employer's market. You know, we're seeing that a little bit right now, where as the economy's kind of gone into recession and maybe darker, we don't, you know, who knows, companies have a little more leverage, the ones that are actually still hiring.
Yeah.
Whereas before that, you know, it was an employee candidate market, to where, you know, you're at the mercy of talent. Like, the talent needs you, or you need the talent more than they need you, because they have so many options.
Exactly.
So I think that's where, like, you know, moving through a quick interview process is one way you can compete, because you want to get to that offer stage quickly before the bureaucracy of Google and some of the bigger companies comes along. And the second thing is, you want to give that, you want to kind of be transparent about, like, we want you here and this is the type of company you have, and this is what's unique about what we're doing. Like, you're going to be building things here. You're not just maintaining an app at a big company. Like, you're going to be building something that could disrupt the healthcare space or could disrupt the cybersecurity space. So I think that's what we work with a lot of our clients, is like, you know, it's okay to kind of sell, quote unquote, educate the candidate on what you're doing, what you're about, and why it could be awesome for them to join.
Yeah.
As opposed to just putting them under the microscope and just drilling them with interview questions. It's like, okay, ask your questions, do a coding test if you want, but like, there needs to be a point where you start to kind of connect with them on like how you see them as a part of your team and a part of your future.
Yeah. That makes sense. I mean, that is fundamental, right? If you don't stand behind a company's vision or what they're doing or what you're going to be contributing towards that on a more day-to-day thing, then that's already kind of a showstopper, right? That can be a deal breaker. If you don't stand behind it, I'm sorry, it's not going to work out. I think how awesome the tech may be or how awesome your salary package may be, like, that is a fundamental thing you're going to be involved in. So I think that's, Yeah, exactly. Like, you can't really work around that.
Right. Right. And you've been a part of a fast growth company, right? And like seeing that culture, you know, as you grow bigger and bigger, it could be a challenge to maintain the culture, or maybe the culture kind of morphs over time because you're hiring so quickly and different people are starting to get to know each other.
Yeah.
I mean, what's that, you know, how have you seen that transition, you know, with your company, like growing that rapidly? Has it changed overnight, or has it been kind of a slow, interesting shift in the culture?
I mean, we're acquiring a lot of companies or partnering up with companies as a nicer way of saying it, joining forces. But yeah, it means we have a big budget and we can basically join forces with other companies faster than we can actually hire all of the engineers individually we need in specific domains. And they all contribute towards our main goal, which at the end of the day is being an authority in whatever we do. But what I've seen is in throughout that process, we really focus on what we hold value in, which is our main mission, which is becoming an authority, but also the values that we have, right? One of them is people first. So if the organization we're collaborating with, we're joining forces with, does not really show that in their culture or in their organization, or if the people that are actually doing the job, the work on the work floor, don't say that that is one of their core values or they don't see it anywhere, yeah, then it's going to be a mismatch. And throughout that, throughout checking your values and seeing if other companies align with that, you can see if there's a good DNA match, right? Because the worst thing you can have is a DNA mismatch. That's going to create friction down the line. And then the joining forces, the cooperation that you imagined is going to have an opposite effect in that as well. But yeah, man, I mean, the more we hire, the more growth pains we see. What we don't want is a non-transparent organization. And what we don't want is little groups forming within organizations just for the sake of them forming, right? It's good if they join together with a certain goal in mind and execute on that goal, as long as it's transparent that it's happening. But the more you grow, I think the more painful it gets. I want to jump back into that recruiting process, because one of the things that I've never seen that you mentioned is kind of that employer's market. I feel like I've always been a really good marketable candidate, as they call it, or I think they call it, in that I can leverage the skill set that I have, right? Or the age that I have, or the experience that I have, or the skills that I've learned at university or what have you, in that I always have multiple options to pick from. And then based on the situation at hand, I can pick through those. I've never had someone in front of me with that kind of ego, kind of pride thing you were going on about. I think that might be a very difficult situation to deal with, right? Or even for them to realize that, like, I don't get why they're hiring in the first place if they really have that notion. Right. How is that going to work?
Yes. Sometimes it doesn't work.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Like, sometimes it takes, you know, and that's, I think, the why I love my job, but also what can be so challenging is, you know, on occasion you run into those roadblocks with a small company and you know, maybe it's someone in the interview process. You know, they have a manager, then they have someone else talk to the candidate, then they have the engineers do a panel with the candidate. Like, maybe there's someone in that wheel that's kind of causing a stoppage from, you know, their behavior. And maybe it's just, you know, I think the confidence, cockiness, there's always that fine line there. But I think some people just don't fully understand what the hiring market's like.
Yeah.
They don't understand that they kind of have to, you know, put their cards on the table and try to connect with candidates versus doing what maybe they were used to 5-10 years ago, which is more so like, I'm going to vet this candidate really hard and decide if they're actually the best.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, I'm a sports guy, so I'm always making sports analogies, and I don't know as much about football or soccer, you know, in Europe, but in the States, like, I always think of basketball and, you know, Michael Jordan, arguably best basketball player of all time. Business is a team sport.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't tennis or golf. When you're building out a team and you're building out a company, you have to have your Michael Jordans, but you also need your Scottie Pippen and your other players on that team that made that work. So you're not always trying to hire the best possible coder of all time. You know, sometimes you maybe already have that go-to coder and you need people that can build around that person and do the things maybe that person isn't willing to do. You know, they kind of, in basketball, they call it like the glue guy or the glue girl that's going to keep the team together and kind of do the things that maybe others are kind of bypassing. So I think that's also the tough part when you're interviewing, is if you're just trying to get the best engineer every single time and you put that team together, you know, talk about egos colliding.
Yeah.
You know, if they all think there's a way to build this platform or build this web app, and they're all on the same team now, and, you know, someone disagrees with how they're doing it, then it's disaster. So I think sometimes you kind of got to look at your current team and be like, you know, what are areas that, where are our gaps? Like, are we just hiring another engineer to hack out more code, or are we trying to hire somebody that's going to lead this team, or somebody that's going to do the dirty work and, you know, do the QA testing and do those types of things?
Yeah.
I think that's where, you know, going into your question is like, some of these engineering managers, CTOs, you know, need to evaluate their team first,
right,
before just going out and trying to hire people,
right,
and then figure out, then you need to change your interview process around, if you need that person that's willing to do all the dirty work stuff, then your interview process needs to change to reflect that.
Right.
You can't just keep the same interview process for the best coder, because, you know, the person that's going to fit you the best for that role that we're talking about might not be the best coder of all time. So if they get a, you know, 80, 90% on their coding test and you're like, oh, if they didn't get a 95%, we're not talking to them. You know, then you're going to miss maybe the right hire, and you're going to go get an engineer that's going to end up clashing with your team. So,
right. How much impact do you get in kind of that team decision? Because I fully agree with you, right? 5 Michael Jordans doesn't make the best basketball team. I probably completely butchered that because I don't know how many people play a basketball team, but I think you get it. But at the end of the day, the same is true with a software engineering team, right? Or a team that creates a piece of software. But how much, from your point of view, do you get to influence that? Because you can say, all right, what we actually need within this team is not what we think we need, right? We actually need A instead of B, and you guys think you need B. But to do so, you really need to know the organization and the team that is there. How do you influence that?
I think it's the greatest challenge tech recruiters face.
Yeah, I like that.
Is like, you know, and you feel this too, probably, you know, if someone's trying to recruit you, it's like, you know, that recruiter isn't an engineer.
Yeah.
Like, you know, maybe they have a background in like sales or HR. It's like, do they really understand what I'm doing on a day-to-day basis? And I think that the same goes for us. And when we work with companies is, you know, they're like, who are you to tell us how to hire or how to evaluate engineers? Hmm. Like, you know, Chase, can you write code? And I'm like, well, you know, I did our website, but that's the extent of it. But I think that can be a tough one. Is you want to find those companies that value you and like, what do I know? Like, I know I talk to top talent in town and I hear from them what their motives are. Mm. You know, I hear from them who else is hiring in town, you know, what the average compensation is for a senior engineer in town. You know, some issues that maybe some other startups have run into as far as if it's tech stack, if it's like venture capital funding, you know, those are the things I'm aware of. So when I can combine that with, you know, a CTO or a tech leader who knows coding, of course, and building out a team, then you can really start molding like a great partnership. So I think we have some companies that have pushed against that. And then over time, like we start to kind of get somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that's probably the hardest part for recruiters is like you try to understand and get to know your clients so well. But some of them are kind of reluctant to let you in the door and like kind of share with you like, hey, these are the bad parts of our team.
Right.
Like, you know, right now, like, you know, we're running low on money and we're trying to get this MVP out the door. You know, sometimes you get those relationships and then you have others that kind of tell you what you want to hear.
Exactly.
Because they're like, hey, whatever I tell Chase, he's going to go tell our top recruits. Like, I want him to be telling his top recruits the best stuff. Like, I don't even want him to mention the crap stuff.
Right.
So I think that's like, that can be an interesting thing for a recruiter is like trying to bring down those barriers with a new company, with a client and be like, how can we work together and know like the ins and outs of your company and your team. So when I go recruit people, you know, I can be transparent with them. Yeah. You know, probably you as an engineer, like you'd appreciate if I was like, hey,
100%.
They've half their team is kind of just clock in, clock out 9 to 5, but then they have two or three people that are like go-getters that work, you know, 60, 70 hours a week.
Right.
That's how their team's built. You know, how do you feel about that? I think, you know, they're open to using a different back end or front end, you know, JavaScript library, you know, so I know you use a lot of Vue. So if you want to go in there and talk to them about using Vue, like they've already told me they're super receptive to making changes to their app. Like having that kind of knowledge is a difference maker.
I can imagine
what you're recruiting. So that's why I love the smaller companies, because you can kind of get, you can get that intel.
Yeah.
Whereas at a big company, like it's just going to be so hard. There's so many levels that it's like, as a recruiter, I'm not going to be able to have much of an impact.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, what I think your value is then is really that advisory role, right? And it's really hard to take that within a bigger company, but you really funnel all the information of talking to every single engineer that you can find or having that dialogue with them. And you take that with you and you're the advisor towards a company that says, hey, what we have now is actually not going to work because you can't really have 5 rounds of interviews anymore. Or based on talking to you, Mr. CTO, we actually don't need that many technical people, but we need people with soft skills or people that can actually build teams. Or like, you have that advisory role way more in just doing that than being like, okay, we need to fill this position and this is it, just a piece of paper. And you basically get the same thing that a recruitee would. That doesn't make any sense. So I really like that you highlighted that that advisory role is really, really where you can add value there as well.
Yeah. I mean, you said it earlier, like keeping your culture as you guys have gone out and acquired new businesses, it's, you know, if the person that's helping you find new people to join your team isn't aware of, you know, your people first culture or hasn't talked to some of your employees, not just the CTO or, you know, Mrs. VP of engineering or VP of product, whoever it is, you know, I think that's part of what we do with our clients is like, we'll go on site if they're in the office or we'll try to get their team together. And just, there's nothing formal. It's just like, we're kind of just getting to know each other, get a feel for how they are, like how they interact, what their teams look like. You know, but it can be hard for recruiters, especially for, you know, when you're recruiting for at a Dell or at a Google, you know, they have hundreds of recruiting agents, thousands
right.
of recruiting agencies. So it's like, you know, that it just makes it so hard. So that, I think that's why I've gravitated towards the smaller companies, because you can kind of, like you said, be more advisory and feel like you're making an impact on that company's culture and their ability to maintain their culture, even with all the hiring. I think that's kind of probably the most interesting thing that I've found a passion of mine is like, I see how cool a company can be at 20 people and I'm going to help them find 20, 30 more hires. But I also want to see that their culture grows. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't start to be devalued by all these new hires. In fact, it continues to elevate. So I think that's probably been the coolest part of my job.
Yeah, that must be really, really fulfilling. I want to get into kind of how you find the right amount of tech talent. But before you do, you touched upon kind of the interviewing rounds and making it more agile as well along the way. What have you seen kind of recently? Because traditionally, I've always seen coding interviews, or I would do a coding challenge before I even talk to a human. Or I would talk to an automated system, right? Do a coding challenge and either I get an okay and then I go through a different funnel, or I get a rejection and I never talk to anyone anytime soon. Mm-hmm. Or I just apply and I never get anything back because probably through pre-screening, like my resume just gets out of there. What have you seen kind of evolve with regards to interview rounds? Like, have you seen it become more of a conversation, more or less coding questions, or what have you seen there?
Yes, in the employee, in the candidate driven market, I saw companies, you know, they were struggling to hire because these candidates they were talking to were getting scooped up so quickly that they didn't even get a chance to do, you know, 3 or 4 interviews.
Right.
So I saw some of those companies and I, you know, we instructed some of our startup clients to like kind of get rid of the coding test that might take like 3 to 5 hours of a candidate's time. And like instead just incorporate it into your interview. So maybe it's kind of like a live coding or a screen share coding session for an hour, as opposed to just being like, hey, here's a test, do 5 hours, you know, work for 5 hours for free,
right?
And then send it to me. And then we'll decide if you're worth coming on site. I think candidates, when they saw that, they were kind of like, you know, some of them were just like, I don't have the time for that. I got five other companies that are willing to make me an offer tomorrow. Yeah. So, you know, screw you. I'm not taking a 5-hour coding test. I think that's where interview processes had to change for an employee driven market, is like they had to make it shorter, make it more efficient, and add more of what we talked about is kind of like, you know, educating them on what the company's doing, not just asking the candidate questions over and over. It was a mutual conversation of trying to get to know each other. Mostly, you know, we always instruct our clients like 2 weeks, a 2-week interview process is probably your best bet. Mm-hmm. If you're trying to acquire tech product talent, 2 weeks or faster.
Yeah.
So because, you know, depending on when you get to them, you know, if you applied online, but you already got 5 other interviews going on, you might have offers within 3 or 4 days. So it's going to be hard for me. I just saw your job application and it's like, I got 2 or 3 days to get you to an offer. Like, I don't think I can do that.
Yeah.
So I think that's where I saw companies kind of get rid of their coding tests, like they'd incorporate it into their interview instead. And then I just saw them kind of combining interviews. Like they would try to, you know, maybe they do a panel interview and then a talk with the CTO after the panel interview. So it was kind of like combining them into 2 hours as opposed to breaking them into like 3 or 4 different interview steps.
Right.
Scheduling, interview scheduling kills interview processes. I don't know if you, I don't know if you felt this, but it's just like, you know, especially to startup, the hiring managers, the panel that needs to interview a new candidate, they're at a small company. So they already have like their plates already full with things they need to be doing. And now you're like, hey, we need you to set aside 3 hours to talk to this candidate and do a panel interview. And it's like, so it kills the business too, because you're taking their opportunity cost of their time spent on coding versus interviewing. I think a lot of our smaller companies, we've tried to like make it as much of a concise process, but getting the scheduling of those interviews, like that's what's tricky.
Yeah.
Is like, how can we block off time in advance so we can get these interviews like they're moving like this? Because we know that every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, your team is going to allocate an hour to talk to our candidates.
Yeah.
So getting that kind of into a well-oiled machine, I think, is hugely important if you're trying to hire some people, but maybe don't have a lot of time, or your team's already really busy and you're worried about taking them away from other activities.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, the value that you add there is making sure that when they actually put aside the time, right, the person that they're talking to already knows a lot about the company or already has an idea about the vision and can ask pinpointed question, right, and make sure that the time that people actually spend on then the interviewing process from both sides is valuable, right? Because the least thing you want to be doing is educating someone or trying to convince someone that is just going to be there and be like, oh, I didn't get any information. So let's start from the beginning.
That's a perfect point. That's something I miss, man, is like, you know, how do you make the most of that 1 hour you have with the candidate?
Yeah.
Like, you know, when you ask them, do you have any questions? And they're like, well, you know, how many engineers are on your team, or what's the funding? Like things that a recruiter or an HR person could have answered these already.
Yeah.
And that way you're making the most of that 1 hour, as opposed to like wasting 20 minutes of that 1 hour just covering like preliminary questions.
Exactly.
So I think companies that have their own recruiters or they use a recruiting agency, you know, I'd lean on that. Like the hiring managers should really try to partner with them and be like, hey, you know, I know you can't talk coding to these engineers, but please make sure they know this is how big our team is. This is what we're working on, you know, things that way the candidate doesn't have to re-ask those questions and waste interview time.
Yeah, I completely get that. I have asked those questions on the phone. And then when people would say, well, we don't know, but you can ask any questions during, I'm like, then you know, like somehow it can also be a misfit, right? If you don't have the basic information of how big is the team or how well is the funding or what are the salary ranges or how many people are they actually looking for, like these basic questions, I feel like you're already a step behind then.
Yeah. You can learn a lot from one call with the company, you know, whether it's a recruiter or an HR person. You can kind of learn pretty quickly, like, do they know their stuff? Like, are they well connected to this hiring manager? Or is it kind of like they're just trying to recruit on 100 roles at once and they're just like, hey, just give me your resume, man, and I'll send it over. You know, yeah. Like, you know, that, and that's not what you're looking for more often than not. So now we talked about a second ago, like in an employer driven market where the companies have more leverage, you know, then you're kind of at the mercy of the recruiter that you're like, hey, please send my resume over because I need a job.
Yeah.
So it can be a little different in that kind of market, but I'm with you. Like since I've joined 8 years ago, it's always been kind of an employee candidate driven market. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, how that progresses.
That's always what I've seen. So I have never been in an employer driven market. Maybe it's because of the position I am, or maybe it's the environment here. I do see people getting laid off or hiring freezes, but I haven't experienced it as much. I just see just as many jobs on LinkedIn as I saw previously. So it hasn't really affected me that well, or that much rather. But I'm curious to see where it goes. If it will get to a point where it is such an employer market that people will be like, okay, just send my resume over, right? Do really just that connection. And I will have to send myself or market myself more in that way. I've never gotten to that point.
Yeah. It's scary, man. I think obviously, you know, you and I might only know the market as that.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, some of these, and I'm always, you know, I'm in Texas, so I always think of Texas and the States, but you know, the last major recession where we had the real estate bust, you know, that bubble bursted, like, you know, there are recruiters I know that were a part of that, you know, the dot-com boom and the .com bust and like what it was like to recruit in that kind of world after those big events happened.
And yeah.
I think it's, you know, it's scary, but in some ways, you know, as a recruiter, you probably have an even bigger responsibility in times like that.
Exactly.
Like, hey, I'm genuinely helping people find jobs that don't have jobs right now. Whereas, you know, in an employee market, it's kind of like, I feel like we're fighting more for the company than we are the employee or the candidate, because the candidate already has 5 job offers. Like, it's not like I'm picking them off the street and getting them a job. Like, they're going to be perfectly fine without me.
Yeah.
but I have a company over here that's like, you know, they're just dying to grow and get to that next round of funding or hit that, you know, hit that certain growth trajectory and they need a new hire. Like, that's where I kind of feel like our impact is as a recruiter. It's more for the company in a market like this. But if things shift to an employer driven market, then it kind of shifts to like, now I'm really fighting for the talent, the candidates who are trying to get jobs. So it's a very interesting dynamic, though I, you know, I'm so uncertain of how that world, you know, what it'd be like. I mean, we got it a little bit like at the very beginning of COVID.
Right.
I don't know if you remember that, where
I do,
like there were some layoffs. Obviously people were freaking out of COVID, but the layoffs were starting to become a thing. And we're like, holy crap, like, you know, are we about to go into a recession or a depression?
Yeah.
So I do remember that and being like, it's scary. It was
scary
and it was different. Like, I talked to engineers and they're like, I just got laid off and I'm not seeing, you know, is anybody even hiring? Like, everyone's frozen right now. You know, people aren't even going out to restaurants or grocery stores. So if it's anything like that, then we're going to have our work cut out for us on trying to, you know, fight that. But we'll see, man. How are things economically where you are versus, I know in the States here, you know, the layoffs are starting to really sink in.
Yeah. I mean, as mentioned, it hasn't really affected me. I don't know of people that have been laid off more recent. During COVID, I did notice it because then, as you mentioned, like there was a lot more or a lot less information about the situation we were in or heading towards. Now that we know a bit more and everything has calmed down a bit, it hasn't affected me as much. Most of the posts I've seen online have been kind of US market or what have you, or bigger companies saying they are not going to hire anymore. But then I do see still new jobs posting up. So I'm like, well, what is up with that? Is that maybe a market thing? So it hasn't really affected me. But as you mentioned, right, it doesn't matter if we're in an employee market or an employer's market. Finding the right talent is going to save a lot of friction and a lot of time down the line, right? Finding that really good match for what a company needs, or finding a really good match for what an employee is looking for. How do you find the right match though? Because that is like the bread and butter of what they have you for, right? Finding the right candidate, the perfect candidate, or from a candidate's position, finding the right company for them.
Yeah, that's what we get paid for. I mean, I think finding talent, you know, for we get paid like, you know, to find these engineers, to find these product managers, wherever they are, you know. And when companies with COVID, they went from hiring just here in Austin, Texas. And I'm like, hey, like, I know almost all the companies in town. So if you're a cybersecurity company and you're looking to hire a product manager that has cybersecurity knowledge, you know, I already am thinking of like 10 companies in town that I could go poach from. When the fully remote thing, you know, has obviously become a big deal. And when that happened with COVID, you know, all of a sudden companies were kind of asking us to recruit in other cities, cities that weren't our backyard.
Right.
So that took a lot of research and like building out kind of a process for our recruiters and our sourcers is like, how do you, you know, if a company is looking for a product manager with data security experience, and also they want someone that's worked in a startup before, you know, how do you tackle the entire United States or even the globe for that talent?
Yeah.
Where we were so accustomed to like, you know, they need to be in Austin and now it's like they can be anywhere.
Exactly.
That was a huge, huge shift for recruiters that, you know, I think the big recruiting companies that had like, you know, they had 100 offices in the US, like they have offices all over the country. Like, it might have been a little easier for them because they could just call up their Denver office or their Miami or their San Francisco office and be like, hey, you got any product managers?
Exactly.
Whereas for us, like as a team of 20 here, just in Austin, you know, it was a difficult challenge. So I guess to answer your question about how we'd go about kind of like finding that, you want to understand from a company, what are their key must-haves? Like, what are those, you know, do they need somebody that can work in a small environment that doesn't have a lot of handholding? You're going to like, you need an engineer that can just hit the ground running, or do you want somebody that's going to be an up and coming talent where maybe they haven't had the opportunity yet to be a product manager? But you want to take a chance on them because you know that Amazon and Google aren't going to take a chance on them until they have more experience.
Right.
So I think there's like different angles you can go about, you know, when you're talking to the company. But then applying that, you know, we use a lot of LinkedIn, use a lot of Indeed, you know, job boards, different ways to get in touch with people who might be open to a new job.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of probably the toughest part about recruiting in this market has been the sourcing. It's been like, you know, if I need to find this data security product manager, you know, how do I build up a pipeline of 100, 200, 300 people, knowing that like less than 5% are actually going to get back to me?
Exactly.
So, you know, I think most companies, like, it's just, it's very generic mass messaging, like check all, and it sends the same in-mail to 1,000 people.
I hate that.
You know, whereas what we're going to do as a smaller company is like, you know, if I'm sending you an in-mail, like I'm going to have read your page and I'm going to do my best with the knowledge that I have to be like, this is why I think you might be a fit. Like, I think even listeners, I mean, you probably can resonate with like, you've received something from a recruiter that's just way off.
Yep.
And you're like, what the heck are you even messaging? Like, you know, it, maybe it's a role that's like the salary is so low. You're like, seriously, it's kind of insulting. Or you're looking for a Java developer and you send it to a Ruby on Rails engineer. And it's like, okay, like, come on, man, like you're wasting my time. So I think it can be minor things in recruiting of just like attention to detail and knowing what you're looking for. And then from there, yeah, it's kind of just an onslaught of in-mailing, emailing, you know, hitting people up on GitHub, like however far you want to go, without kind of like being too aggressive, but
yeah,
you got to find a way to get the talent on the phone. And then from there, it's on the recruiter to be like, okay, I'm pitching you on this company and why, you know, why they're interesting and what they're looking for and seeing if that excites you or not.
Exactly.
I think that's probably the second biggest duty is like, as a recruiter, you're not just a gatekeeper. Like, you're not just there to be like, here, I have these three questions that, you know, the manager told me to ask you. You know, do you use any front end languages? It's like, no. Like, you know, if you're trying to recruit somebody, you need to give them a reason why, you know, why they should talk to you.
Exactly.
And why you might have something that they don't know about. For us, we recruit for small companies. So like, you probably have never heard of most of our clients, but you might hear of them someday because they're trying, like, they're disruptive, they're well-funded, but they're only a couple hundred employees. And you know, when I talk to candidates, I'm like, hey, you might've never heard of this, but this is the value I'm bringing. Is you would have never heard about this if I didn't reach out to you.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of the responsibility recruiters have when it comes to that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I really like that. Like, that personal approach in getting the foot in the door, right? That conversation starter or conversation opener. I really appreciate that because in LinkedIn, I have a little microphone in front of my name. If that microphone pops up in one of the email messages, I know it's an automated kind of thing that went out to everyone. And I'm like, okay, it's already, I'm not going to read it. I'm going to disregard it because they haven't read anything. It's not going to be a good match, right? It's not a tailor-made fit. But when, for example, I've had a recruiter reach out to me and they said, I rate your page and they point out some details and they made a custom video. I was like, man, they made a custom video. They can't do that to everyone they send it out to, right? You can do an automated thing to thousands of people. If you do a custom made video of like 5 minutes to 1,000 people, that's going to be a huge time sinker. So with that appreciation in mind, I replied. I said, I'm not currently looking, but I really appreciate like the video that you've made. Or I said, let's keep in touch. Or I will always remember that guy that did that because he made that video, right? He put that personal touch on there. Other people might disagree, or they might say, think it's cheesy or what have you, strategy. I don't really care. I like a personal touch. Right? I'm simple. Yeah.
I'm with you, man. And you know, if I send you a message and I've got, you know, the Facebook Meta logo at the bottom, like, even if I sent you a message that, you know, I sent to the same message to 1,000 people,
yeah.
Like if it has that, you know, if you know the company is Meta or it's, you know, your dream company, then maybe you kind of like, you're willing to overlook that and still have a conversation.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, and I think that's the other hard part about recruiting for companies that aren't super well known is like, you know, I have to find a way to get you to at least take a phone call so I can tell you why I think it could work.
Exactly.
So like you said, but I think customization is key. And I also love it because it's like the big recruiting firms have a hard time doing it.
I agree.
Because, you know, because they're a numbers driven shop. So they're going to send out as many messages as they can. And it's all going to be kind of mass blast.
Yeah, exactly.
When I was younger in my career, I'd get those recruiting messages. I'm like, wow, man, like I'm getting recruited by all these people. And then I started reading the message and it's like, hey, Chase, comma, and then, you know, you're the best sales guy I've ever seen on LinkedIn. It's like, oh, okay. Like this actually wasn't written to me.
It's such a shame.
Yeah. It's kind of depressing.
Yeah, I agree.
But hey, you know, it's like, yeah. It got my attention, but as I became more knowledgeable and engineers, especially, I mean, they're used to getting recruited as you can relate to, they're used to being recruited, receiving emails all the time, emails all the time. So you kind of have that radar of like, is this legit or is this absolutely just a piece of crap kind of mass message?
Yeah, I agree. I wonder what your take is on this, because getting the foot in the door, getting the conversation is one thing, right? But when you're on the phone, adding value is really your next step. I hope, at least that's my expectation when I'm on the phone on the other end. But what a lot of people do is not really talk about which company they're talking about, or they don't want to mention the name because they're afraid I'm going to go behind their back and apply directly. And I'm like, why are we doing this little dance around the name? Just tell me the thing. Like, it's not like I haven't heard of them, which is fine, or I have heard of them and I have a preconceived notion, which is also fine, right? Then it's a mismatch. But kind of dancing around the name in that way, man, I really don't like doing that dance sometimes. Yeah.
It's no fun, man. Especially if you've done like three or four of them in a day. You're like, okay, like, please don't waste my time. Can you just send me the company and the compensation range and all that before we talk? And a recruiter is going to hold that hostage because that's their
right
on, like, that's how they're going to get you. So I think, you know, it's a car. I like having worked at a big recruiting firm when I started my career, like it is a cardinal sin to share that information before you get them on the phone.
That so sucks.
It's not always a recruiter's fault because like their boss told them that. And if they gave you the info and you went around and applied online, then all of a sudden like that recruiting firm doesn't have credit, like they don't get credit more often than not for that candidate. So that's the fear, but it's a little easier for us with smaller companies because it's like, hey, we're going to cut the BS and we're going to share information with candidates right away to speed up the process. So some of them might go apply online, but you know, as long as when I tell you we talk to them and that's why they went and applied online, you know, we have a good enough relationship where we still get credit for that kind of stuff. But I see, yeah, it does suck. The dance is, it's so annoying, man.
Yeah.
I can only imagine how annoying it is for you. It's annoying for me. I mean, I feel guilty sometimes. So I'm just like, I told our team, I'm like, we're sharing that information and like, we're, you know, ask them not to go apply online, but we're just going to take that risk because it's like that's a calculated risk I'm willing to take instead of doing the dance and putting candidates through that annoyance.
That's really cool.
And then sometimes they just ghost you. Candidates will just ghost you because it's like, if you're not going to give me this information, I don't even want to, you know, I'm not even going to reply to you anymore. So that, and sometimes you send them all the information, then they ghost you and you're like, oh gosh, like, are they going to go online and apply and just bypass us completely? And sometimes they do. And it's like, hey, just how it goes.
Yeah, stuff happens. I mean, so before I got this job, the way I got this job is I went through a recruitment company. They called me and they said, well, I have a company in Hilversum, which is the area we're at. And I knew of only one company that was really good in Hilversum. So they laid out all the values and all the principles. And I was like, okay, listen, it's this company, right? You can still put my like resume in front of their table. But from the moment we have the first conversation, I have the first conversation, I'm going to do direct communication with them. They were like, we don't advise that. Blah, 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 blah. Everything would go through us. I said, no. And I also, when I had that first conversation with my potential manager, which ended up being my manager, I said the same thing, right? I appreciate connecting us, but because I already know the values in the company, I don't really need any help here, right? So I appreciate the connection. And sure, I don't know how the compensation will happen, right? Obviously, for the connection, they should get something or they should get the whole thing. I don't really care, but I felt it was my responsibility to pick it up from there. And I did that throughout the interview rounds, right? The feedback was directly towards me and then from my manager's perspective to the recruitment company as well, which then contacted me to talk about that. And again, I said the same thing all the way until the salary negotiations where I was like, I'm going to negotiate because I think I'm worth X, Y, and Z. And they would tell me, don't do that. Don't do that. The fact that you got an offer here is really good. So don't go too hard. And I said, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to make my own mistakes. And I did. I didn't really get that far with regards to the negotiations. But I did learn throughout that process, right? I learned how I came across. When I actually got hired, I could see all the internal communications going on about my application process, which was so satisfying to read. But for me, it was really educational as well to pick it up from there. I don't know in your point of view if I did them wrong, the recruitment company. But yeah, that's kind of the path I chose for myself.
Yeah. And it's your job application. It's your interview process. You know, I feel like a candidate deserves that. You know, the right to be like, hey, you know, I want to run with this.
Yeah.
Like, recruiter, you did your job. You brought this to my attention. You told me about the company. I'm interested. But now, you know, this is, I want to run the show, you know, and I think as a recruiter, you try your best to respect that, but also, you know, try to control the process, especially around, I think scheduling and feedback is like the hardest thing because a recruiter's trying to like, okay, well, I'm afraid Patrick's going to go, you know, what if he's got five of their interview processes going on? Like, I want to be able to tell the company, hey, you need to speed it up. Because I just talked to the candidate and he said he's got five other interviews going on. Or he said, like, you know, he loves your tech stack, but he's not so sure about James on your team, who was kind of a weird dude on the interview. You know, like that kind of stuff. That's what a recruiter likes to know. So they can obviously try to make those changes. But at the same time, you know, it's I love how you took ownership and you're like, hey, like, this is, you know, this is my life, my job, my career. And like, I want to be in control of this versus having a recruiter kind of manipulate it the entire time.
Yeah. And I feel like manipulate kind of is maybe a more negative connotation. Like I wouldn't put it in that way, but I just like having direct communication, right? Even in building software, I want to talk sometimes directly to stakeholders to figure out what they actually want, right? And having some person in between. We did that as kids. You would sit in a chain and one person would say something to the next one until it would go all the way to the end of the chain and something completely different pops out. Yeah, that's kind of the same thing, even though we only have three parties instead of two. That is what happens on a micro level then.
For sure. And I think that's the hardest part about a recruiter too, is when you talk to a candidate, they tell you how the interview went. Then you go talk to the hiring manager. Like sometimes the stories change or like they get more dramatic or they're more extreme. And it's like, oh my God, you know, this candidate's gonna, you know, they hated their interview with James. And it's like, really, like they didn't mind it. But by the time it got relayed from my recruiter to me, to the client, it's like the story, you know, it's like the game of telephone. Like,
yeah.
Like you said, it, you know, the story ends up getting more dramatic based on how, you know, how stressed out I was or how stressed out my recruiter was. So it's, sometimes when you can get rid of the middlemen, women, it can be a good thing. But that's the hardest part, I think, is like trusting a recruiter, because some of them are good, some of them are bad. And then there's like a couple at the top that are like really, really good.
Yeah.
But that probably goes for any services, you know, real estate agents, like, you know, you're buying a home, or insurance salespeople. You know, there's the good, the bad, and then there's like that small amount that is really good at what they do. And it's hard to tell sometimes until you're kind of in contact with a recruiter and you can start to get a feel for like, wow, like this person really knows what they're doing. Like, I'm going to trust them to run this process with.
Yeah, that makes sense. I agree with that. Man, I really like this conversation, kind of getting insights on the other side of the table. I don't think I've gone in depth in that way with someone with regards to their process and their views on that. But we do align on a lot of things, I've noticed. Even though we're across the world, it's interesting to see that the same values that I hold, how do you say that? Values that you hold value in? That's not really a good way of putting it, but maybe that is the way. We value the same things basically, even though we're across the world. Is there anything you still want to share?
I mean, we've gone over it, but I think, you know, most recruiters, you know, they get into recruiting because they care, you know, because they care about people. Mm-hmm. Like they want to interact with people and they want to have some kind of impact on people. So I think, you know, from my standpoint, it's like, you know, sometimes like if you're an engineer, if you're somebody that's getting recruited, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. Right? Like people want to hire you. People want to talk to you. Now you're going to get people reaching out that maybe, you know, didn't put the effort in that you wish they did. But I think just remembering that like recruiters aren't there to, they're not trying to sell you to buy something. Like they're just trying to tell you about a job or a company they're representing. So, you know, I think that's the battle, is like, we're all trying to accomplish the same thing. It's just, like you said, it's kind of like, I think as a recruiter, you have a responsibility to send it. You know, if I send a message to somebody who's being recruited by a bunch of other people, like take a second and really, you know, tailor that messaging, like tailor, you know, make sure, give Patrick a reason to speak with you versus just adding another email on his plate. Like he's already busy. He's already being recruited. Like respect his time. I think that's the one thing, you know, and I'll shut up about talking to other recruiters, but I got into recruiting. And then as I've been in it, like I've stayed in the industry because it kind of upsets me, like how some of these other companies just kind of treat it so transactionally.
Yeah.
And I just wish, you know, and speaking to you as an engineer, the type of person I'd normally be trying to recruit, it's just like, I want you to understand, it's like, that's my motive, is like trying to get, we've built a team around like recruiters that care and try to understand what you do and add value to you, not just annoy the crap out of you with 1,000 emails a day.
Exactly.
So there are some recruiters out there that are actually good. So that, I guess that's my general point, is like giving them a chance. Sometimes it's not their fault. They're just being told what to send. But you know, we're all trying to accomplish the same thing, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I really like that. At the end of the day, we're trying to find a win-win here. Right. And the way people go about it is different. You have a good way of going about it, maybe a less good way, but at the end, the goal is the same. I agree with that completely.
And you want to be nice to recruiters, man, because it's, if the market, you know, if you lose your job or if your skills, you know, get outdated because some new software language comes out and you've never heard of it, like, you want to have a recruiter as a friend, because, you know, their job is to be plugged into companies that are hiring. So that'd be the last thing. It's like, you know, you can, you know, don't respond to the crappy ones, but try to stay in touch with the good ones, because they might, you might need them someday.
Yeah.
So I think it's a good way of looking at it.
Relationships are good to have, for sure.
for sure.
We're gonna round it off here. Chase Kocher, everyone. I'm going to put all his socials in the description below. Check him out, and we'll see you on the next one. Thanks for listening.